Welcome back. If you aren't already following Naked, please take a minute to do so you don't miss out on any future episodes. Each follow means so much and it actually helps a lot. If you have more than just a minute, it would be absolutely incredible if you could leave a review and maybe even share an episode with a friend. I'm relatively new to the pod world, especially new to the things that are important in the podcasting world. And apparently reviews and follows are up there on the list of importance. So I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this. Welcome to Naked, where stories unfold. I'm your host, Janelle, a once former pastor's wife who exchanged small town living for a nomadic life. The unexpected change in our life led my husband and our four kids to traveling the world. From years of being rooted in our small town to the thrill of wandering the world, our story has been anything but ordinary. On our journeys, we've met amazing people, learned their way of life, and heard their unique stories, which has led me to understand the profound impact of shared experiences. In each episode, we explore moments of transformation, guided by one single question. Is there a time in your life when everything changed? We invite ordinary storytellers like yourself to share the often unexpected turns in life. So grab a seat and settle in. This is the Naked Podcast. Welcome back to the Naked Podcast. This is part two of my conversation I had with my husband, where we talked about a time in our life when everything changed. So if you haven't listened to episode 25, I highly suggest you go back and listen to that one before you dive into part two. Thank you so much for being here, for being part of the Naked community, and for listening to these stories. All of us are so grateful that you're here and joining us from wherever you are in the world. I hope that you have a beautiful and wonderful day. Here we are, you on my left again, and I was just saying to you that
yes.
Our better sides is actually the other side.
I tried last time.
I know you did.
We're not having it.
I just think we're cuter on the other side.
The backside? No. I don't have much butt.
No, you don't. You don't. Do you remember where we were?
Do you want to switch?
Do you want to try it?
I wanted to try it last time.
Okay, let's try it.
All right.
It sounds like we're climbing out of an attic when we get out of these chairs.
It's director chairs?
Yeah.
Lawn chairs?
Okay.
Oh, that's so much better.
Yeah, you look cuter on that side.
Mm.
Okay, you know where we were? Do you have any idea?
We kind of just cut it off. Apparently we were in Narnia?
We were in Narnia. I know. Because we're sitting in front of this beautiful, I don't even know when this would have been made, but a long time ago. And it has like a big lock on it. And it's. I told the kids, like, this is the door to Narnia. So maybe we could take you for an adventure.
It's funny. Actually, when you talk about, I remember the first time we came back after the first year away. I know I'm sort of jumping forward a little bit, but you come back and it was like hitting a treadmill that's like running, or like going through the airport and you get on one of those like moving walkways.
Yeah.
You're just like, whoa, I'm going fast. Like everything's moving.
Yeah.
And I just remember like time went by so quickly when we were back in Canada. Like it's just busyness. Things were just going and happening.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me realize, oh, okay, I often use the, when people ask me about traveling, I often use the story of Narnia, where it's like, you go and live an entire life
mm-hmm.
in this other space.
Yeah.
And then you find yourself tumbling back and it seems like you are reinserted into a lifetime ago.
Mm-hmm.
You've lived all of this other thing over here and you get thrown back into your normal life. And it's like, it's weird because time stretches so much mm-hmm. when we're traveling, when mm-hmm. we're out, because like the mind is constantly trying to do like conversions on money and where is safe and what's not safe. And where do we go to get food and what's a good thing to eat? You're never on autopilot where you just sort of drive home from work one day and don't even remember your drive.
Yeah.
It never happens.
No.
So it's kind of a funny thing, though, finding a wardrobe.
Yeah. No, I do remember coming back from traveling the first year. And it's like, we've talked about this, how different cities have a heartbeat. It's like when you're a child and you come home and you don't need to see your mom, but you just know she's mad. And you're like, I'll just be going to my room because you can feel that essence. And I think as we've traveled, we realize like different
cities.
Hopefully
it's not me. Hopefully it's not me.
Yeah.
It was always me.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. Sorry.
No, but having like each city has
that's why when you're mad now.
Yeah.
I'm just like, just please be one of the kids.
not me.
Ah, she's disappointed in me.
But you can feel it. Like a pulse.
Yeah.
It was like a pulse of cities and villages. You can kind of feel when it's rapid. And I think that's one thing we noticed, or I noticed going back, was just the rapidness of life. Maybe that's partly because we know so many people there and things like that. So it's easy to get on that treadmill of life. But
it's routine. Yeah. It's normal. It's,
yeah, you don't have to think about where you're going. You just go. Yeah.
You don't even need to steer because the ruts are so deep.
Yeah.
Just get there.
In fact, it's hard to not do what you always did in that environment, even though you've learned a different way of living. It's hard not just like those train tracks are so deep and so engraved. Like the groove is so there that you just, it's easy to, here you are. Mm-hmm. You know, you're just going full force ahead. You don't know. You just don't realize that you didn't stop. Right? You just didn't stop. You just were going. I think of it sometimes as a child when you see a kid, like especially babies, and they're just like, they're enamored by their hand and they're just like so taken up by it. Kids are such beautiful teachers and how they just know how to do things and be really present because nothing else outside that hand exists.
It's all discovery.
Yeah.
Everything is new.
Yeah.
Right? And so apparently, I'm going to butcher this because I'm not a science guy. By the fact I just said science guy, you can tell. But apparently the way we sort of catalog time is through making of memories and discovery. Mm-hmm. And so when you discover and learn something new, it's like there's a waypoint in time and there's a waypoint in time. That's why when you're young, everything is new, right? Like Christmas used to take what felt like 5 years to get to you every year.
Yeah.
Or summers felt so long.
Yeah.
Right, as a kid, and now, like by the time you enter and leave high school, summers are like gone.
Yeah.
Like you're just like, that's it. I'm back to school. Like this is because you're learning so much less.
Yeah.
There's less discovery. There's less creativity. There's less imagination to make things happen, and you just settle into routine. And then now, like I hear a lot of people are like, it's Christmas again.
Yeah,
like we just had Christmas, which is the exact opposite. When you're a kid. But I think the whole thing, and that's why when we're traveling, time just slows right down.
Yeah.
Is.
It requires you to be so present.
Yeah.
You have no idea where you're getting your groceries or where you're the safe places to be or where the park is, or you just, it's all discovery. So you're just, it's like looking at your hand for the first time. You know, you don't know where you are. And that's part of the beauty. That's the thing, the big thing that we all learned is presence. There's something about it, how it expands time, you know. I remember when we traveled, like even our time in Scotland, it felt like we had been there for so long. And it would have been 5 weeks. And we're like, I felt like we had been there for months.
Yeah.
Because there's so much discovery.
And that increased when you went to like Asia.
Yeah.
And I think it's because everything is so different. Right, you're not just driving on the other side of the road like you are in Scotland and trying to make out certain dialects, but it's still English mostly.
Yeah,
until you get way north. Now you're in this entirely different side of the planet, and now you got anywhere from 3 to 4 family members on a little scooter, through the middle of a
rush hour,
a 15 million person city. With thousands and thousands of bikes that are like folding together like a deck of cards. It's crazy. And so like you're always learning, always discovering, always having something new and different. And it's the wonder and the like amazement just, I don't know, it does something magic. It makes time relative. It just stretches it.
And
it feels like I've lived 4 lifetimes in this last 6 years.
Yeah, totally.
7 years.
Almost seven. Yeah. So let's go back a little bit to where we kind of ended off on the last pod. So we were just coming out of, oh shit, we're going to die. I don't know if a car, these things, you know, feeling really like you're tumbling. And then the novelty of feeling Scotland. And Scotland was, we had both experienced prior when we were younger. We'd gone there as kids and did some stuff there. So bringing our kids there didn't feel so scary. But then we went to London, and I was chatting. We chatted a little bit about this where you were like, let's go to this cafe. And I was like, I'm pretty sure someone's going to try to shoot us here. Like, just being so on
weird
the
edge. Thought about that about London and not when we were moving to California.
Yeah, yeah. Just like, I just felt so, I think it was just the lifestyle there was very different.
We went to Hackney Wick.
Yeah.
Which, you know, all the graffiti, yeah, and all the, that's not a part of, you know, your normal life.
No.
Saskatchewan girl here hasn't really been a part of that scene or community much.
Yeah, no.
I've been exposed to it a little bit, but not a lot. So you're on alert.
Totally.
But what a great area.
Yeah. And that, that fear of like waking up sweating, being like, oh my goodness, what have we done? Have we done the wrong thing? Are we crazy? We totally are crazy, you know? And then being in London and being afraid to go out. And then there, I think we were able to take that fear in some realm and turn it a bit. For me anyways, you were a lot less fearful. You're more adventurous than I am. I'm much more like, I like to have my safety nets, you know? But I was like, okay, we need to do something.
Well, there was a stabbing on our train.
There was. That scared me.
Yeah.
That was like the first time that you guys went out. I'm like, they're taking forever to get back. Why are they taking so long to get back? And then I start Googling, like, just, I don't know what I looked up, but it was like, current stabbing on so-and-so. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's the same train they're on. I was so afraid. Oh my goodness.
That's why it took so long. They shut down the train line.
They did, yeah.
A little stranded. So.
Right. But I, you know, and so you're on edge for so many reasons. Mm-hmm. We just like had the carpet ripped out from underneath us and just feel like, what are we doing? You know, there's really no path. But then we met this guy in the street. And
you did.
Well, I did, yeah. So the kids and I decided, I was like, we need to go out. Let's go buy some chocolates. Let's make some notes and let's go and do some acts of kindness in the neighborhood. Maybe that'll like help me like just see people, because I was just afraid. I was really just afraid. And so we walked around and I put some on people's cars, people's houses. And
then you fear what you don't understand.
Right. Yeah, exactly. We met this older man who'd been raised in the area. He lived there as a child. He was raised there. He's an artist there. He has like an art studio, and we gave him these chocolates and he started singing, don't worry about a thing. And we're just like, he was so lovely, like kindest eyes and just such a, like a lovely person. I don't know why I'm crying.
Insert clip.
Yeah. I think it broke the barriers.
Mm.
Things that you're like afraid of, or people you feel like you don't understand, or you feel so different from them, and it just created this lovely bridge. Just the first interaction on our trip that reminded me that we're all so similar and we all just want to be loved and be seen. And it was just like he saw us. I don't know if he knew how afraid I was, but he just had this warmest, warmest embrace and kindest heart. He's like, come over. We're leaving the next day, but he's like, come over to my place. I want to show you my art studio and you guys can come and practice art with us. And it was just like, wow, people are amazing. And I think that's for me when it started to change. It felt like it started to change internally for me. Where I felt less afraid and more in awe. And I think that's when we were like, what are our values and what's important to us in this trip? And it's like, yeah, we're going to see great things like the Eiffel Tower and we're going to go on these adventures. But like, what is this about?
Right.
You know, even travel days. Oh my gosh. Like I remember travel days, an absolute stress case of nightmare. Like, I'm a pretty calm person, not on travel days. Well, packing days. I would say travel days were your stress case.
Yeah.
Packing days were my stress case. Whereas it's like, we're packing, and I'm just like, I just know the packing day is coming. I can feel all of, like, the anxiousness and overwhelmed feeling. How am I getting all of this into that? You know, like, we traveled the first year with three carry-ons, six backpacks and six people.
Yeah.
That means you and I shared a carry-on for all of our clothes.
I know.
Our backpacks just had our like toothbrushes.
Well, mine was all like camera gear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't even know what you were wearing. Like just same pair of pants the whole year. I'm not sure.
It's not much more now. I have one bag.
Yeah, you do.
Like a duffel.
You're
like,
minimal. That's it. But it just, it was such a like we were living such compact lives. And so we had to put everything into these bags. And just that angst of being like, oh, dang, how are we going to do this? And then we'd get past that. And like the kids were all like hyper, they're feeding off my energy. And then the next day was yours. And it was like, everybody just shut up. Dad's taking this day and he's going to be stressed. And it was just like probably 3 days on either end of just like absolute on the edge of our seats because we were just so, I don't know, wound up. It was just like the moving was a big deal, you know? And I think all of that started to change. Moving days started to change. The experience of traveling started to change as we started to see people.
Is it when I got the nickname Oscar, or was that before then?
No, that was years ago.
That was, yeah.
That was when the kids were little. Yeah, no.
Concept of time.
We brought that back?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you had resurrected yourself from that name for a while. And then when we started traveling, there was like, these days were just like so angsty. So we just like, Oscar's here. And we just knew what that meant.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah. That's okay. I was like totally crazy for the first the days before packing. So it's fine. We took our turns. We've calmed down since then.
Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that experience with that gentleman in the streets in London then turned into this, like, why don't we give out chocolates on to every flight we go on? Why isn't our day of travel a day of giving back?
Mm-hmm.
And that like created this excitement. It cost us like $20 to $30 every flight we went on, but it changed the way we looked at travel day.
Yeah.
And it changed the way the people that were the flight attendants, the flight crew, it changed how they felt. Like I can remember many times them ushering their kids into the front to come meet the pilots. And I can remember other times when they would just cry and be like, I've never been thanked.
Right.
Like, what? For me? You know, and it softened the travel day so much. And it's like, oh, this whole thing is about seeing humanity.
Yeah.
And I think that's how everything started to slowly change. And that's what made the trip feel like.
I think that's also when we wanted to stop seeing everything.
That is.
It's like, yeah, we're going to go see one thing.
Yeah.
Two things, maybe, whatever. We're not going to pack all these sightseeing tours in and go see all the stuff. Yeah, we missed some things. So what? But it was about the people.
Yeah.
And connecting, like, especially when we got rural.
Yeah.
Right? Like, remember, like, Thailand, Bali. Vietnam was less rural. That was right in the thing. But, like, getting invited into, like, people's homes.
Yeah, you remember
and
that?
Seeing how they live. The kids went to a funeral in Bali.
Yeah, they did. They
saw their first dead body.
Yeah. But the...
There's a guy just laying there in the garden.
Yeah, but this is their, like, life, right?
Yeah. It's like, he gets buried in the garden.
Yeah.
And that's just part along of it. With family. All the other people that are there. So it's like, but being a part of that, getting like, there's this big festival. Let's go out into the streets and carry torches with all the villagers.
Yeah.
And watch them do their big fights with these creatures they made. And like, it's crazy. It's being a part of those things. It was felt... And I felt very honored.
Yeah.
To be let in. It's like you can come backstage. You can see behind all the tourist stuff.
Yeah.
Come back here.
Yeah.
Let me show you what that is. And just being welcomed into people's lives and their homes and into the turtle sanctuary, in with the nuns.
When we were in Spain, I remember us being at a park and I think it was a beach actually. And this woman started talking to us. The kids and we went to her house and she's like, yeah, I've got room for all of you. Tiny little apartment.
We all crammed in.
They made fresh pasta and we just enjoyed dinner with, I think she was from Israel and he was from
Italy,
and they spoke like 12 languages between the two of them, and they had us in their home. And it was like, wow, we're a big family to invite A couple of people is one thing.
That kitchen?
Oh, it was so little.
We're trying to prepare meals for eight, nine people. And they had a friend. It was like 10.
Yeah.
And this like hallway of a kitchen and everyone's trying to cook. Yeah. It was like, it's crazy.
And the dining room was like in a bedroom.
We had like, lawn chairs
at
the table.
But it was just like, it didn't matter. It was like this connection with people. And that's the thing that I think surprised us the most. And being in Europe was one thing. Like we joined the nuns and helping serve the homeless. And the girls were wrapping presents for women in prison and the children. But then, like you said, like being in Europe was one thing, that there was these beautiful opportunities that transpired and we got to connect with people. And we were really afraid. I remember sitting in Malta and we're like, should we go to Asia? Or should we just go back? Because we knew never, neither one of us had been there, and we knew the language is going to be far beyond our understanding.
Yeah, because Maltese was within our grasp.
Yeah, that's true. That was not, we didn't speak to anyone there. We tried. We tried. But then we went to Asia and it just grew.
Mm-hmm.
That understanding of humanity, the love of people, the embracing, like we know no Balinese. We know no Vietnamese. Like we don't speak any of these.
That might be the hardest language.
Crazy.
Vietnamese.
Yeah. And yet they opened their hearts and their doors and their spaces and invited us in. It's one of the most engaging, I think, eye contact. People just really see you. I remember being there and they like bow and like
in all the markets, all the stalls.
Everywhere. It's just so engaged with you.
Yeah.
You know? And then inviting us into some beautiful spaces, like with the turtle. We were in Bali and we had gone past this place a few times and you kept visiting it.
You couldn't get the hours right.
Yeah.
It was like a 20, not even like 10 minute drive on the bikes from our place down on the beach, and it kept going there and they just couldn't seem to find the right time when everything would align, and then it did.
Yeah.
And met this man, Kiki. And Kiki, because he's the youngest.
Oh yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
No, they have like the four names.
Yeah,
and just like Made, just cycles. Made, good day.
Katut.
Katut's the youngest.
Oh yeah.
There's something, I can't remember them all now. Something in Katut, but like Kiki wasn't part of that.
Right.
Thing. He just had his own name.
Yeah, he did.
And him inviting us into this sanctuary, which is what it was. It was a sanctuary for turtles, but it was for him as well. I remember going to his house and having a translator with us talking. And just discovering that he was a drunk, and one night stumbled on these turtles, these eggs, and decided he needed to dedicate his life to protecting these eggs. And dug a hole and marked it out and guarded them, and then the turtles hatched and they went into the ocean, and then he decided, that's what I'm gonna do with my life. And he did, built this thing. The government comes for turtle releases. Got to be a part of this giant thing where he held back a turtle for each of us. The six of us, we were there a lot though. We'd go there
3 days a week, for hours,
and got knee deep in some turtle shit. Like
we did.
So we paid our part,
but
didn't realize people go there to be trained on how to do this.
It's part of an education.
Yeah.
It's like part of a certification.
Like, we got like a certification and a diploma.
With turtles.
In turtle care.
Yeah.
Not knowing that was coming. Like we just wanted to show up.
Yeah.
And so you fumble into these discoveries of these places and you just realize, man, the world is full of amazing people.
Yeah.
That are just doing a part. They're just doing things. That's the other thing. It's like when you start to get into some of these giant cities, Guadalajara, Ho Chi Minh, and I would be so overwhelmed at times. I'd get to a place where there's a view and you just look over the city, Rome.
Yeah.
Another one. When we were at the top, we saw the chandeliers in the street and you just saw the throngs of people.
Yeah.
I just become so lost in the fact that I don't matter.
Hmm.
It's like, it's impossible for all these people to matter.
Hmm.
There's just too many. There's too many lives. There's too many individual stories wandering around for it to matter.
Hmm.
And then it becomes almost a freeing thing. Because it's like, oh, the world will continue without me. It will keep going.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't matter. In the grand scheme, it don't matter.
Mm.
Just another one of these humans wandering around with 8 billion others. And anything I do will incrementally improve or destroy humanity, those around me, the planet, all the things. So I can be a drop in an ocean, but that's the only way to get an ocean.
Yeah.
It's through all the drops.
Right.
And so you don't matter what you do. And so it's just this liberating thing for me.
Mm.
I think coming from like the religious background and the... I don't even know how to put it. The weight on every decision and the weight on every life, and that everything is valuable and everything matters. And it does, but there's like this push to be great and to have an influence and to influence those around you and the world to make an impact and a dent. And those things are fantastic, but sometimes it just becomes too much. And then you become something you're not, you naturally aren't, in order to make a difference, right?
Mm-hmm.
When the difference is handing out some chocolates and scrubbing a turtle. And if that's the part you play, you've played your part.
Yeah.
Did you see it? Did you see the beauty?
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah, I just found myself overwhelmed at times with how much was going on and was freed by it to actually be me, to actually settle in and just do the thing your heart wants to do.
Hmm.
Not do the thing that's going to make an impact.
Mm-hmm.
Do the thing that your heart wants to do. Because believe it or not, your heart wants to make an impact.
Yeah.
So I think that was probably one of the freeing things for me during that time is discovering that.
Hmm.
Discovering that's how you make a difference. You show up and you hold some kids.
Yeah.
You know? You help people that have a hard time walking learn to walk.
Yeah.
Comb someone's hair. You scrub a turtle.
Yeah.
You make a meal. You love. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Interesting how we started and how things. I was writing about it just recently about how I don't know why I'm so emotional today, but so when we got to Vietnam, it's a huge city. Ho Chi Minh, we're in, I don't know how many thousands, millions are there, a lot. I remember looking out of our window.
So we're between 15 and 18 million or something like that, I think.
I remember looking out of we were in this apartment, 32nd floor. And our view was the many streets below us.
District 1.
That's funny. And it would just look like a bunch of ants because we're so high up. It just looked like ants. And they were all just like, you could just see the river of scooters and motorbikes and...
Mm-hmm.
Like, mostly that's what they're driving. There's very few cars in comparison to how many motos there are. And just being like...
Wouldn't get anywhere if there was cars.
Yeah, you wouldn't. It would just be...
This is like semi-trucks. They had semi-trucks.
Yeah.
And bikes.
Yeah.
That's it.
And they're like... It's like watching them is like watching you drop a deck of cards. It's just... They're flopping. But they're actually... They're somehow making sense to it all. And they're... I think someone once said, don't just look at what the person in front of you is doing.
Yeah.
And that's all you need to worry about. Don't worry about anyone behind you. Just follow the person in front of you.
I can't remember who said that. but it was just like that shifted everything for me.
Yeah.
All right. Like coming from Canada.
Yeah.
You're always like, oh, I got a lane change. I got to check over my shoulder. I got to see what's going on behind me. Check the rear view. I'm going to know your positioning. Everybody's got their space. You're too much in my space.
Yeah.
Try to merge and somebody won't let you in and you're owning the road. There's all this, like, I don't know. There's like too much personal entitlement and too much personal space. Mm-hmm. That is required. Mm-hmm. There is no entitlement there and there is no space.
No.
And so it's like, just focus on the person in front of you.
Yeah.
Everybody behind you will do the same.
Yeah.
And so you have this incredible level of trust.
Yeah, you do.
Right? Like, I think that was the thing for me. It's like, don't trust anybody on the road.
Yeah.
Roads are full of idiots.
Yeah. Yeah. They're all looking up.
Right?
Yeah.
Everyone there is like, just focus on the person in front of you. And so you'd have like 12, 14 bikes side by side and like 25 rows deep.
Yeah, easily.
And they're turning left. And then the same thing is coming at you.
Yeah.
And so you end up like, I remember I was turning this way and then there's a group coming this way. And I'm like, okay, I'm just going to trust it. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to trust it. Focus on the person in front of you. Leave enough gap for someone to go in between. The people coming across are going to do the same.
Yeah.
And it was like watching cards when you shuffle them.
Yeah.
They just.
Yes.
And streams of people totally. Were crossing one another and somebody right in front of me and somebody right behind me.
Thousands.
And I was just like, this is incredible.
Yeah.
When everybody understands it.
Yeah.
And respects it.
Mm-hmm.
Then it works.
Yeah.
It just works. I was like, oh, the whole world has to know about this. I got to bring this home. It never worked. Yeah. Too much entitlement. Too much.
Well, it's just
it's my road.
World, right?
Yeah,
and true. It's butt clenching. Like, I remember riding in the back of that scooter with you, me, two or three other kids, and just being like, oh my gosh, you know, are we going to make it through? Just because it just looks like absolute chaos, but somehow it's organized chaos that you don't know unless you have been there long enough to understand it.
Only one accident.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they said.
And it wasn't my fault.
No.
It was some foreigner.
Well, they said.
Says me.
Yeah. Never. What did they say? Never look down through a crosswalk. Always be walking with your head up looking. And this girl was.
Looking at her phone.
That's all she was doing. She was looking at her phone, walking through a crosswalk. And she got hit by like two bikes. Like it was scary. I mean, it was just the awareness of like. Just know where you're going, like whether you're walking or driving, look up.
I thought I killed her. Her head hit my helmet.
Oh, so scary.
And the bike went down. You just like popped off the back of that thing, like, boop, I'm just going to stand on the road now. Like
you know, it's crazy though.
You just stood there and like laying on the ground, the bike's running.
But everybody just kept going around as there's thousands of people behind us and they just kept going around.
Look, everybody on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
Picked her up, picked me up,
yeah.
Brought the bike up,
yeah.
Straightened up the peg on the bike. Everybody okay? Here's some water. All right.
Yeah, totally.
Like, whoa. But everybody was there to help.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah. Everybody's there to help.
Got her an Uber
to get her
where she needed to go so she didn't have to walk. But like, other than that,
yeah,
everybody was fine.
Yeah.
She probably had a concussion.
Yeah, it was a bit of a hard hit.
Hit her head pretty hard.
Yeah.
But I had road rash and broken foot. No, the broken foot was something else. That was the door frame.
Toe, yeah. That's part of the adventure. But I think Vietnam, I was bringing it up as like, we're in this big city. We know a couple that's moved there years ago.
Mm-hmm.
They adopted a couple children and they live there. And I was like, again, like our goal is how do we find people? How do we connect people? I'll never forget. And we walked into this, one of the cleanest spaces I saw in all of our time in Vietnam. This room full of children. Mm-hmm. There's 80 kids, I believe, living in that specific home. That were schooled there. They had rehabilitation for children there. They were fed there. And it was run by two elderly people in their 80s. Husband and wife, and it was one of their three orphanages that they ran, and the children were kids that had been left in the streets as infants because of their disabilities were too complex. They didn't have any means to provide them.
Well, a lot of it was left over from the Vietnam War.
Yeah, Agent Orange
gets into the soil.
Yeah,
and apparently, when you stir that up, it actually can last for years and years and years. And yeah. So they were discovering these children born 10 years ago now.
Yeah,
that were having
twisted spines and
yeah, all sorts of birth defects because of chemicals dropped in bombs.
Yeah.
To create peace and democracy.
Yeah. These poor children were just left in shoeboxes in the streets.
Yeah.
And this couple would just find them. Eventually, these kids just started being dropped off at the door because parents didn't know what to do with the complexities. And we walk into this room, and this kid, there's kids on the floor, you know, crawling. There's kids with severe disabilities helping other kids do things with disabilities. Just, they had such a nurture and love for each other, and they were a family. And this older couple had created a safe place with these kids, looked after each other, but they also looked after their place. Like, it was spotless, and there was no cleaner there. These children were the ones that were helping keep the place clean, and not all the
kids, volunteers, but like,
yeah, volunteered, but very few. I think we saw one the whole time that we were there.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, whenever we think about Vietnam, we talk about the food in the orphanage.
Mm-hmm.
Because the kids, like, there's this one little girl, and her name was Wynn, and she just, like, fell in love with Greg. It was like he was her dad.
No, I'm emotional. What's amazing is we probably had the most amount of communication with them than almost anybody else that we came across in these other countries that didn't speak English. We had people that spoke English that would help us, or that were looking after the properties that we were staying at. But we probably had a stronger connection and more conversation with these kids.
Yeah.
Of course, our dyslexic kids are teaching them English.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they, because they're nonverbal, a lot of them.
Yeah.
And so the connection was just all touch.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all expression. And coming from Canada, a little touch adverse, you know?
Except for me.
Well, yeah, but still, people don't just walk up and touch you.
No.
No. But these kids,
they were all over you.
Yeah.
And just so loving.
Well, the one girl wouldn't stop pinching you.
Yeah. Ow.
That was just part of who she was. But yeah, all sorts of love and affection without boundaries.
Yeah.
It was
magic.
Yeah, absolute magic.
Yeah.
So,
just along the lines of, again, people, just humanity is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And people just want to love and be loved. Feel connected.
Yeah. And good. People are good.
Mm-hmm.
People are amazing.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. I remember, once we got into Barcelona, like after leaving the UK, that's when I was on edge, was in Paris, Barcelona, because I was always like pickpocket leery and believing all the stuff that, you know, you see and hear about, which really wasn't a thing. Got pickpocketed in Rome, but I think that's just a rite of passage in Rome.
Yeah.
But that was like the only real negative experience,
yeah,
other than being flashed by a few people on the street. But
that was the only human, I would say, like, negative interaction we had. I mean, we had our car towed, and that was kind of an adventure, but that was just because we couldn't read the signs. We had our stuff infested with bed bugs. That was a bit of a deal. That was something we had to really figure out, because we knew nothing about bed bugs. And we were waking
up. You learned fast.
We were waking up with bites. The girls had hundreds.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. But people. Like,
unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
We're in a tuk-tuk going, it was in Thailand.
Yeah.
In a tuk-tuk, and Kiki's new hat that she bought for the beach had like flown off and it was like lost on the highway. It's gone. Yeah. And then like 5 minutes later, all of a sudden there's this honking.
This is a lane of traffic. Let's not forget.
Oh yeah, it's a highway.
This is like a highway full of fast moving vehicles. Yeah. It's not a slow. Our tuk-tuk, our hair is all over the place because there's no windows.
Yep.
There's like a tiny little roof on it and it's just like, it's all open. And so we're just a whirlwind of a mess because we're on this highway.
And then we just hear this honking.
Yeah.
And this person drives up next to our tuk-tuk and like unrolls the window and like out comes the hat.
Yeah.
And so they're swerving over and we're like leaning out of the tuk-tuk open on the side. We're like grabbing the hat.
Yeah.
Like, thank you. Beep, beep. And they're gone. Like, you lost your hat.
Yeah. Oh, I got it for you. Or like the time when we were in Vietnam and we didn't know how to cross the street.
Oh my God.
And we was like when Greg was mentioning earlier, there's like 12 lanes and there's, you know, thousands deep. And we're like, oh my gosh, okay, but how are we going to cross the street? Like, we need to get across the street. And it's just, this traffic is just going nonstop. And we're sitting there for a while. And all of a sudden, in one of the lanes.
This is 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And nothing is stopping.
There's like, no way.
There's no sign of this thing slowing down.
There's no lights. There's no stop sign.
No.
There's nothing. And then this guy stops. He's one of the people that are driving down the street with all the thousands. Mm-hmm. He sees us. You can explain it.
He drives up. So, like, you know, again, a dozen lanes.
Yeah.
Or a dozen bikes. Three lanes. And streaming past. And so he pulls up on the inside. We're standing here. And he turns his bike sideways. So traffic is going this way. And he's completely parallel to traffic.
Yeah.
Really 90 degrees. And he's, like, waving us. Come on. Come on. So we step out in the street. And like a rock in the river, he's creating a space for us.
Yeah.
And so then he starts driving across all these lanes of traffic with bikes going all over the place. We get to the other side and step on the curb and he's like, whoop, whoop, and then he's gone.
He just
like, he was on his way to work or something. And he's like, this poor white family is going to be standing here when I come home from work if I don't do something.
So sweet.
And just showed us how. Yeah. And then we just watched a grandma just wander out into traffic.
Yeah.
And just like bikes went around her and she went across. I guess you just walk out into it.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, this is again, how you do it.
Trusting in other people.
Yeah.
And, you know, you just don't do that. You're not taught to trust anyone.
No.
There, it's a necessity. It's a way of life.
Yeah. You have to. And there's such connect, like so much community. Mm-hmm. I think that's what I realize is that
everybody eats in the street.
Yeah.
On those little plastic chairs.
Totally.
Like, people don't cook at home. They're just like, go out and sit till like 2-3 in the morning.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Eating banh mi and having drinks.
Yeah.
On little tiny plastic chairs.
little kids' chairs. So cute. Yeah. It's crazy. But we never would have this idea like, let's go see the world. And it's like, let's go see lining up
people.
People. Yeah. And how that felt. How those connections made us feel so at home.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think there's a loneliness to traveling that people don't talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, not being home for those special events, Christmas and these birthdays and things that you're normally around for us especially, and not being in, like, there was a couple, like 9 months for something where we were in countries that their main language, not English. So you're having to try to figure out just to get by, like how to say, where's the bathroom and these things. And then you're like, oh, we're moving again. Got to figure out a new language, you know? So it can feel like there's all these barriers between you and people because you can't communicate the way that you would. It's like part of your personality feels like it's just like stuffed out. Like you just can't get to it because mm-hmm. you can't express these things. And then I think we just realized that the connection came in, like you said, with the children. And we couldn't speak the same language, but they couldn't speak either. But it wasn't limited to just them. That was the connections we found in Bali. Like, we ended up being a part of this huge community called Trash Heroes that cleaned the beaches. I had no idea that Bali had so much trash that just, like, collected around the beaches. And tons of trash is cleaned up every weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe 1% of them spoke English, but we were friends with them. You know, it's like this little grandma putting around arm around Kiki and be like, Kate, let's go. And just like, there's so much to be said about this, these arms, these eyes, this, our mouth, the way that we communicate through our body language, that like, it didn't matter. And that's what I didn't realize about traveling. I was so afraid, like trying to order coffee in Italy. I'm like, I don't know, I'm screwing this up, you know? And just like, those are just little things, but the communication is so much deeper than that.
It's just the connection. And then the barriers we have culturally.
Yeah.
To, you were saying like the way that everyone sees you when we were in Indonesia, in Southeast Asia, where people see you and because of the bowing and welcoming. And it's like, it seemed like everybody was more alert and attentive and not just walking past you, even though there was way more people. But that's a very strong difference culturally. I remember the first time I went to Ethiopia and we gave someone who was looking after the kids at the orphanage there, we gave him a camera so that he could take pictures and send it back to us. This is in early days of like internet. And so I was showing him how to, like, on the computer, showing him, okay, this is how you attach a photo. This is how you send it. And one of the things I observed in Ethiopia is just, and we've seen it in other places, is just the affection amongst friends, like men, walking around holding hands, arms around each other. It's just a normal thing to show that level of affection. But that's, you know, considered this or that in North America. And so there's like this lack of physical affection or amongst men. And so I remember sitting there typing, showing him how to send an email. And again, that affection is not, there's no barriers there for that. And so here, sit and type. He's sitting here and type. And his arm is underneath mine like this. And he's just like rubbing my arm like this. Like he would someone you're super fond of. And I'm trying to type, and this guy is doing this to me. And I'm like, Emmanuel, I don't know what to do with this. Like, I didn't say that to him, but inside I was like, I don't know what to do with this. I'm having all sorts of like barriers being crossed. And I know it's just him showing affection because he's super appreciative of what is happening. And I am like, okay. It's not that I have a problem with it. It's just, it's foreign. I don't understand it. And then I just relax into it. I'm just like, okay, he's just saying, I love you. And yeah, I love him. Like, so just take it. And I just remember just like taking it and just the, it was like, there was a part of me that was like really, really dry and thirsty that I didn't even know existed. And I just started receiving this affection, male affection or masculine affection. And it just started flooding into me. And I was just, oh my goodness, I didn't know this was a part of being alive. You know? Because my friends weren't like that. It wasn't a part
of our culture.
It was, and it, especially growing up in like the 80s and 90s, it was definitely not a part of culture. If it was, it would make you queer. And so you just like, there was all sorts of stigma and stuff wrapped around it that it just that all started to crumble. And I was like, this is incredible. You know, I come from a Swedish Norwegian family on my father's side. And so not a whole lot of physical affection going on there either. Because that's just not what happens. You know, it's not a part of the family culture. Not Italian.
Not Italian. Greg has a way. I feel like everywhere we've gone, you like connect with Italians, Balinese, like you start to know a bit of their language. I don't know, you pick up a couple words and you become besties. It's like you have more best friends around the world than any of us do. It's crazy. Just have these connections.
Yeah. It's great.
It's interesting. Yeah, it is. It's like, I don't know. It's this beautiful thing that you've discovered about yourself, I think, as we've traveled, and it's become more and more obvious the more places we go.
Men love me.
They do. Our last place, we were in Italy a few months ago, and this guy owns a restaurant, and he's
Daniela,
super lovely man. We ended up wanting to get Greg an apron for Father's Day. The girls went over and he's like, oh, if it's for Greg, give him mine. And he takes off his apron right there and he's like, this is a gift for him. It's just like, oh.
Well, the restaurant was right connected to where we were staying. And so you got to walk past there all the time. So we have a little conversation.
Yeah.
I would know a little bit of Italian that I would just try to practice out, and then they'd correct me. And they'd teach me a little bit of Italian and words that aren't like common.
Yeah.
But they'd speak some English, so they did all the heavy lifting.
Yeah.
But it was just sweet. Just hanging out, and we'd barbecue out front. Oh, it was a walled city, right? So it had this long corridor, it's just ocean on the other side.
Yeah.
And so when the wind would be blowing, I'd have this little tiny grill, this barbecue that I'd be putting burgers or steak on or whatever. And if the wind was blowing right, the smoke and everything would run right up the street.
Yeah.
And right through their courtyard, like right where the restaurant was inside, but they had like tables outside. Mm-hmm. And this one night I was just flooding them with smoke and just burying them in the smell of like
goodness,
sizzling beef. Mm-hmm. And so that was right at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And I walked past the next day. He's like, you were cooking the meat. I'm like, yes, I'm sorry. He's like, no, cook it all the time.
Next time invite us.
So... good people.
People like, they're fascinating. Mm-hmm. I think a little bit about like going back to life before traveling is that I was just so caught up in doing the things, you don't really see the people.
Stuck in the rut.
Sometimes you don't even know who your neighbors are, and you can live in the same street for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like those beautiful connections just aren't there.
You remember those people that lived across the street in Sagewood?
Yeah.
You do?
No, I don't. I know what they look like, but I don't know their names.
Exactly.
Yeah. We were there for 10 years. Right? It's like such a shame. But that's what I think it's really, that's the surprise
mm-hmm.
for us. It's like, we're going to go travel the world. And we wrote down on those pictures, all the things we wanted to see there. It didn't include what we know about.
You think when people meet us, and we explain what we do, and they're like, we travel the world? I know the thoughts like this, they've told me, what goes through your head is just like, oh, the Great Wall of China, and then pyramids, and oceans, and mountains, and temples, and the Eiffel Tower, and stuff in Rome. Just start seeing all like these incredible highlights that are from all around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And those things exist.
Yeah.
But that's not the goodness.
No.
You know, it's like climbing a mountain.
Mm-hmm.
There is so much beauty when you get to the top that you can't take it in. You can't absorb how incredible it is. And so your senses overload.
Yeah.
And you're like, wow, this is nice. We should look at going down.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be 5 hours of going down too. It's the up and the down that give you the amount of time you need to take in the detail of the beauty.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the mountaintop.
Mm-hmm.
It's the up and it's the down. Because
mm-hmm.
that is when you're present. That is when you're looking at the small.
Mm-hmm.
The little wildflower. The creek. The trickle. The rock rolling down the hill. All the things that you can't see when you're at the peak.
Mm-hmm.
You just see valleys and mountaintops and clouds. And it's astounding. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
But that's not where the goodness is.
Mm.
It's in the little, where your feet meet the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to be in that place right then and there.
Yeah.
That's when you take in the beauty mm-hmm. and the wonder of it all.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the traveling is. Yeah, great. Colosseum, incredible. Like,
yeah.
Pantheon, the Parthenon, mm-hmm. you know, Pantheon, like 152 feet across, largest freestanding span for 1500 years. Incredible. You know?
Yeah.
Incredible that somebody would think of that.
Yeah.
But there's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Comes and it goes. The second time you see it, it's like, wow. And the third time you're like, yeah, the lineup's too long. I'm not going in.
Yeah.
But the people.
Yeah.
The people you're with, people you meet, those you bring into your orbit,
mm-hmm.
into your universe.
Mm-hmm.
That's the special.
Yeah.
That's home.
Yeah.
That's home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember when we were in Nicaragua. And it's a place we weren't really wanting to be for very long.
Not at first.
We just, it was really just a stopover between Mexico and Costa Rica.
Yeah, just, you got to go to Costa Rica.
Yeah, because well, our daughter was going to school there, and she was like, mm-hmm. let's go to Costa Rica, it'll be amazing. And Nicaragua.
But you say Costa Rica to someone, they go, oh, Costa Rica. You say Nicaragua, they go, Nicaragua.
Where's that? It's not dangerous.
Yeah, right next door.
Yeah. So we like stopped there for a couple months, had a really abrupt start with all Greg's camera gear being taken away.
Ah, borders. And you wonder why I was a bear on travel days.
Yeah, the borders are scary. And then we get your stuff back. And we finally settle into the bugs and the howling monkeys. And we're just like, okay, this is, here we are. We're going to be here for a little bit. And then we start meeting people.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going to the cafe, to Ding, and every time we'd go there, we'd meet somebody new to come back. Like, how did it get better? Like, how does this place just keep getting better? How is it possible? And it just did. And then we were like, we should do a Thanksgiving dinner. There's some people here. Like, we should have a gathering. Well, we had one of the worst storms. Like, and we lived out in the middle of Timbuktu nowhere. We're out in the middle of the jungle.
You have to drive the truck a lot to get there.
Yeah. It's like drive through the river to come to us. Which would be fine on a normal day because people can navigate it. But on a stormy day, it's really bad.
Treacherous.
So we'd initially had a like guest list of like 16 people. But times, like the word started to get around. So it grew to like, I think it was like 75 or 80 people. Then the storm hit and I was like, well, maybe we only have 16 people. And 60 people showed up to that dinner in the jungle.
Mm-hmm.
I was just looking at pictures of the day and just
being like, we don't have enough food.
Who knows? Good thing they were all bringing a little bit.
But like, Alex, here's $200. Go buy some chicken. Yeah. Take the truck.
Go get some food.
Nobody in town's going to have any chicken ready. I know. Go to Rivas. Came back with just trays of chicken.
And we had this amazing meal and connection with people. And where we did the gratitude tree. And
mm-hmm.
people were what they were grateful for. And I remember just standing back and being like, this, like you said, this is home where mm-hmm. you feel connected to people. And that's...
Everybody knows your name.
Yeah. Right. Cheers.
Always glad you came.
Yeah. Yeah. Something beautiful about that. Home is where you are. People. Connections. The togetherness. Where you can be seen and be accepted. All the same.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's chosen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that's not without risk.
Mm-hmm.
It can go all horribly wrong. But you gotta drive through the traffic trusting that the other person will do their part and not hit you.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only way it works.
Yeah. Love is love, and that is a beautiful exchange. It's like just running.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Yeah.
Welcome home. It's empty.
It's empty. Oh, thanks for being here. For sharing part of our story. Just one of the snippets.
Where else would I be? It's in my bedroom.
You're stuck with me. No. Thanks for this crazy ride. Oh, man, when we never knew we were getting on. It's crazy. We're still on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Keeps teaching and keep learning. Yeah.
What I've learned from my travels.
Is?
Oh. I think we covered it.
Maybe you haven't.
Where you are is home. Home is people.
Not a place or a structure. Four walls and a ceiling.
Nope. That all changes. We've stayed in anything from churches to castles to tree forts
to jungle huts,
tents
to damp
everything in between houses. Flooding houses, yeah. Bug houses, houses with snakes,
toads,
everything. Toads coming out of the toilet.
Yeah.
Not frogs.
No.
Toads.
Toads, yeah. Ants that are just like taking over the entire house. That just
took over. Like,
yeah.
This is ours now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And none of that is home. Mm-hmm. That's a building. Home is what you put into it. Mm-hmm. It's the space you carve out and create. Mm-hmm. By who you're with and how you interact. Mm-hmm. And that is 100% in our control.
Yeah. Yeah, because you can live in a home and be strangers with all of those under that roof and not be home, not feel safe.
Yep.
Right.
There it is.
Yeah. That was an emotional one. Thanks for joining me. For sitting here and for talking about all that.
Of course.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm going to walk 25 feet to my office and go to work.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks so much. Thank you for joining us today, for being part of.
Oh, yeah, there's people here.
Naked, and for listening to a bit of our story and the journey that evolved from in a very unique way that's totally changed us and our kids, the way we see the world and the way we see ourselves and the people in this world. Yeah. Cheers to all the amazing, wonderful, glorious people and connections we've made along this crazy journey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I can't cheers. It's empty.
Cheers to myself.
Bad luck.
All right. Thank you for joining us. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please take a moment to subscribe and leave a review wherever you get your podcast goodness. This way you'll never miss out on any future episodes, plus it really helps us. And if you want to share your favorite episode with a friend, that would be absolutely incredible. This goes a long way. If you'd like to join Naked by sharing part of your story, just leave us a message on Instagram or email us at nakedwithjanelle@gmail.com. Also, a big thanks to my son, Mikkel, who is the best cheerleader and maybe one of the biggest believers in Naked, and also produces and edits all our podcasts. I am beyond grateful for him and very aware that I couldn't do this on my own. Thank you so much for tuning in and for being here.